Howdy. Greg Swan here. I publish a weblog called selfadoration.com. I wrote a book called Man Alive, a Survival Manual for the Human Mind. And I make these videos to talk about the issues that I raise in that book. Today is October the 8th. It is the federal holiday, Columbus Day. Columbus Day is actually 4 days from now, but the purpose of all holidays now, all special days on the calendar, is to give people who work for the federal government or companies that hew to the federal government's calendar to give them an extra day off to turn it into a 3-day weekend for time-serving functionaries. So today is the celebrated day of Columbus Day. We are so much at war with Western civilization in the West that I don't know why we continue to celebrate Columbus Day. That Columbus Day is a day set aside on the calendar for evil Marxists to decry the crimes of Columbus and all of the conquistadors and all of the Europeans who followed them into the New World. And we know for sure that the Europeans who came to the New World were inherently inferior people because they discovered the New World and the New World didn't discover them. This is the typical Marxist argument that stupidity is intelligence and inaction is action. Lack of value is value. Corruption is virtue. Crime is commendable. Reason is impotent. And you are a pitiful specimen of humanity. I don't believe any of those things. To the contrary. I don't apologize for the crimes committed by the conquistadors or by other Europeans in the New World, but the fact that you're watching this video is directly attributable to the spirit of the West, the spirit of Greece, however it evinces itself, wherever you find it, and has nothing whatever to do with Paleolithics who happened to live here before Columbus got here. Man Alive is 6 months old today. It's October the 8th. The book was published on April the 8th, Easter Sunday. Man Alive is 6 months old today. I am delighted by this fact. I am proud of this fact. And at the same time, I'm kind of dismayed. In the 6 months since the book was published, a lot of people all over the world have read it. Thousands of people have read it. And I know from all over the world because I get email from them. From Northern and Southern Hemisphere, Eastern and Western Hemisphere, from far-flung places all across the globe. And I'm delighted by that, frankly, because, I mean, I'd really rather that millions of Americans had read it, or millions of people in England or Sweden or Greece in particular, Italy, Spain, Ireland, places that are suffering under the consequences of the kind of chicken shit socialism that we live under in the United States. But I'm even more delighted that people in places like Persia, the Arabian Peninsula, India, the subcontinent of India, China, South Africa, I'm delighted that people are reading the book there because as bad as we think we might have it here, there are people on this earth who have it much, much worse than we do. And the only way that we're going to see any of this corrected is by people learning to think for themselves about the world around them and to respond appropriately rather than attempting to dictate to the universe what it will do according to their specious doctrine. The specious doctrine that's destroying the earth right now is Marxism. There are hundreds of dogmas that I could name, each one of which is patently, obviously erroneous, just stupidly erroneous, but the dogma that is killing the world right now is Marxism in all of its various flavors. The socialism of the United States, the communism of Cuba, the communism that was in the Soviet Union or in Cambodia or China, the communism that continues to exist in Red China. But the National Socialism that we saw in Nazi Germany and frankly the government of the United States is best characterized as a National Socialist Republic. Fascism under Mussolini, There are a zillion and one names for this. I mean, just pure welfare statism, if you insist. There are a zillion and one names for this, but all of it is reification of crime, an attempt to sanctify criminal behavior by putting a whole bunch of fancy adjectives in front of it. What socialism is people like Joe Stalin, the bank robber, the murderer, stealing wealth from the people who produced it in order to give it to people who didn't produce it. That's what it is. And it's destroying the world. It's destroying everything that Greek civilization is. This is one way of understanding Marxism is the ultimate perfect anti-Hellenic counter-revolution, that Judaism, Christianity, and Islam can all be understood as anti-Hellenic counter-revolutions, an attempt to turn back the clock on Greece. But Marx really perfected it. He turned it into a set of memes, a set of ideas that people can propagate to one another to the point that they don't even understand what they're doing. They do not understand that they are delivering their own children into perpetual slavery, that the killing fields of Cambodia or the atrocities in Red China or 17 million murders in Nazi Germany or 70 million political murders in the Soviet Union, that these are not the exception, that this is somehow an aberration and real communism hasn't yet been tried. No, this is real communism. This is real socialism. This is real Marxism. Marxism is a criminal philosophy, and the only thing that it can achieve in the long run is mass graves. You know, incredible mass slaughter of innocents, of people whose only crime is either not hewing to the party line, not accepting the dogma, not mimicking and mouthing the dogma, or that much worse, whether they accept it or not, suffering under the consequences, starving to death, starving to death. I mean, the killing fields are horrible, and that is a horrible, horrible thing. But even the most absolutely merciful communists on earth, nevertheless, would end up slaughtering everyone, not by political murders necessarily, but simply by starvation, because you cannot build an economy on crime. Crime does not pay. Who knew? But as thrilled as I am by the massive numbers of people who have read the book all around the world, I'm still somewhat dismayed because the book has really not gotten any sort of attention in the viral world of internet. Richard Nikolai of FreeTheAnimal.com has done very, very well by Man Alive, published the book in chapters over the course of months, and encouraged a lot of discussion of the book. I don't know that the discussion was all that apposite to the point, but there it was. It was wonderful stuff. Sonny Miravalosa, who I've known must be for 20 years, maybe longer than that, took care of the book. Kurt McManigal did a review of the book, and a few others, and almost nothing, which is, you know, frankly, it's to be expected. I mean, one of the things that Man Alive goes to great pains to point out is that so-called thought leaders, which would include people who run internet websites, for the most part are attempting to enslave you. They are attempting to indoctrinate you in order to rob you of your sovereign indomitability. It actually cannot happen, but to convince you that it has happened in order to exploit you, in order to rip you off. And whether or not these people are socialists, obviously many of them are, but not all of them are, and whether or not they are socialists doesn't really matter, because whether they're socialists or various flavors of Christians or rent-seeking Republicans or any other flavor of dogma that you could name, if they are not saying the same kinds of things that I'm saying, then they're saying the opposite. That Ayn Rand, for instance, spent the last half of her life railing against altruism, which is a philosophical doctrine. There was a philosophical doctrine named altruism. Comte was responsible for this. And obviously there are a whole lot of advocates of altruism. You hear them all the time, you hear from them all the time. But altruism is just a flavor of anti-egoism, and the purpose of altruism is nothing other than to be anti-egoism. And there are all different kinds of anti-egoistic arguments out there, and all of them are alike unto altruism in the sense that they really don't have any positive objective whatever. Their objective is wholly negative: to attempt to eradicate egoism, the possibility, the potential for egoism from your mind. And so anyone who isn't making arguments very similar to mine is probably really not going to like Man Alive and probably isn't going to want to do much to propagate it. And that's where I depend on you. That's where I depend on ordinary people. It's right there. It's the introduction to the book. It's the very first post on selfadoration.com. My objective is to help ordinary people like you, like me, save the world from tyranny. And so I depend on you to propagate these ideas, not just to show up and read or watch these videos, but to share them with the people that you know, the people that you love, the people you want to have the most and the best that they can have from the one unique, irreplaceable human life that they have. And if you do that, then I don't need anybody else. This is the beautiful thing about the internet, is that the unit two cost of anything is free, is nothing. The first unit takes time, takes effort, may take material supplies, may take investment. But the second unit, the cost is an email. The cost is a tweet. The cost is a Facebook post. And especially do I want to get into your email network. I want you sending my stuff to the people in your email network because those are the people who are really listening to you. If you post something on Facebook and you're, I've got 400 friends on Facebook, I got 1,300 friends on Facebook, I got 6,000 friends on Facebook, you have zero friends on Facebook. And if you have 6,000 friends on Facebook, the people who have friended you on Facebook are seeing thousands and thousands of Facebook posts a day, or chances are they're seeing none because they're all just kind of gliding past their eyes while they ignore them all. And so, you know, if you want to promote me on Facebook, I'm all for it. Please do. But it's going to have a lot more impact if you go into your warm network of people that you share email with and people who like and trust you and say to each one of them individually, one-on-one, this is a book that I read that has made a big difference in my life and I think it will help you. I think it'll make a big difference in yours. And give it a shot. Give it a read. Let me know what you think. I would love it if you did that. I want for the 7 billion prisoners of anti-egoism, anti-libertarian, anti-freedom, anti-indomitability, all of the victims of tyranny on the face of the earth, I want them to be able to have access to this book. And that's why it's free, and that's why it's so readily available. And if you want to propagate it, feel free. There's a propagation kit at selfadoration.com. You can grab that propagation kit, and you can use that to propagate it on your own website. This is content that you can turn into your own content on your own website, your own weblog. I entreat you to share this book with as many people as you can. And I have zero doubt about the need for this. Every passing day convinces me more and more. Number one, because nobody talks about the issues that I'm talking about. Everybody is always talking about economics or politics. No one is talking at all about moral philosophy. It was a cat. Cats can destroy anything. She may be trapped now. No, she made it out. And now she will go run and hide for 2.5 hours. No one talks about my issues. And really, I'm interested in politics. I'm a libertarian, and I'm a libertarian, far more extreme libertarian than anyone you've ever met, I promise you. I am, even if you have met anarcho-capitalists, I'm extreme even by their measure. That doesn't really matter. Oh, you can't have anarchy. We will have anarchy. This is the only way that human beings successfully coexist is in a state of anarchy, in a state where each individual is self-responsible. We will have this as the modus vivendi, the means of living for every civilized place on earth. In fact, it is the only form of government that exists right now. But I don't need you to accept that. I don't need you to agree with that. And the same thing. I mean, I'm a capitalist. I believe in free market capitalism, which means no, well, we got to have some regulation. Mitt Romney, we got a knowing lazy communist versus a clueless energetic communist running for president. So what will be the outcome of this election is more communism. That is a given. But Mitt Romney in the debate last week said, we got to have regulation. How am I supposed to know what to do? How am I supposed to know how to put my thumb up my ass if I don't have 17 pages of federal regulations telling me how to do it? I don't want any regulation in the economy. I think that regulation exists so that rent seekers like Mitt Romney can steal your money. And the side effect of the stupid regulation is that it prevents true innovators from coming to market at all. The costs of regulation are double what you think they are. Even if you're willing to admit that regulation is an impediment in the economy, you are only half right, because the second impediment is the one you don't see. This is Basquiat, the seen and the unseen. The second impediment is the one that you don't see, the lack of innovation, the inability for innovators to bring new products to the market because they're already regulated out of existence in advance. But what happens if somebody gets injured? Well, that's what tort law is for. That's what courts are for. And if people get injured, and obviously, you know, government monopoly of the courts has been a disaster also. It's, again, a great place for rent seekers to go to get protection from their own egregious behavior. But in a circumstance where there are free market civil courts, then when people are injured, they will be compensated. And you may not want for people to be injured, but I got bad news for you. We live in a physical universe, and people are gonna be injured. And what we... Obviously, the ideal situation is not to try to engineer a situation where no one gets injured. That's the nanny state in action. That won't work anyway, but it will result in all kinds of other injuries, including the injury to your paycheck to the tune of 40, 50, 60% taxation. But the ideal circumstance in the future would be for business people to be so aware of the consequences of negligence that they are hypervigilant to make sure that they don't end up in court and they don't end up paying big judgments for causing injuries. And that will, there will never be a circumstance where people will not be hurt in the universe, but the purpose of establishing rules among people for social interaction is to result in the best results for everyone with the least negative consequences. And that can't happen as long as there is some dumbass emperor, whether it's Obama or Romney, sitting over everything, dictating what can and can't happen and exacting half your income or more in taxes in order to ruin your life. It can't happen. But that doesn't matter. None of that matters. And so I don't talk about this stuff. I will talk about politics from time to time. I will talk about economics from time to time, but I'm really not interested. I'm interested in moral philosophy because that's where the action is. If you perfect your own character to the point where you are always choosing admirably, where your choices are always admirable in your own estimation, then you're no threat to anyone. And if everyone else is choosing on the same basis, then each one of those people is no threat to anyone. And when we're all no threat to anyone, that's the circumstance where each one of us will realize the best possible benefit from social interaction at the lowest possible cost in terms of losses or injuries. That's what will that's what will cause it. And so this is why I'm an anarchist. I'm not an anarchist because I have a fantastical view of human nature that suddenly there will be this miracle where people will no longer be injuring people. It's not a miracle. There will be a circumstance. This will happen. It will have to happen. The human race will perish if we continue to try to live as criminals. And so my objective is to help you learn how not to be a criminal, how not to participate in these rent-seeking, crime-seeking, death-seeking doctrines. And I know that my arguments are needed more than ever just on the basis of the things that I'm writing about from one day to the next. Today I wrote a post about an article that appeared in the New York Times, this evolutionary biologist. When you hear the words evolutionary biologist, you should run. An evolutionary biologist is plausibly a biologist, I don't know. But when they add that word evolutionary, they are attempting to become social scientists. And in the process of becoming so, every social scientist is, frankly, a high priest in academic garb, someone who is issuing moral dictates that have absolutely no basis in anything that that person can demonstrate in the work that he does in his work. And so when a biologist tells you something about biology, okay, this is interesting, and you can duplicate it, you can demonstrate it, that's science. Good for you. I'm happy. But when a biologist tells you that something that he discovered about zombie bees, which was the topic of this essay in the New York Times, tells you something about human free will, what you are hearing is a lie. What you are hearing is a bald-faced lie, an attempt to indoctrinate you in an anti-egoist philosophy, frankly, in order to make a better sucker of you. Because I promise you that the evolutionary biologist who wrote this essay lives on tax dollars. And the trouble with living on tax dollars is that sooner or later, the taxpayers get tired of being milked. They get tired of being shorn. They get tired of being slaughtered for the benefit of thieves. So this argument in the New York Times was completely ridiculous. It was just stupid. It was documenting one after another strange cases of microorganisms that take over other organisms, and you know, bees or flies or things like that, and then analogizing from that to human behavior without even getting into the issue of father tongue, which of course no one talks about father tongue but me, because either they don't get it or they don't want to get it. But human cognition is radically different from the mental behavior of other organisms. And so even if you were to offer up some argument about microorganisms taking control of the human brain, would this result in a poem? That was one of the arguments that he made, was that a poem is a creation of basically a brain disease. And this is absurd. I mean, even if there are brain diseases, I mean, meningitis, there are all kinds of brain diseases out there, and they can result in physiological consequences that are quite striking and really remarkable and really disturbing when you first come into contact with them. But they will not result in anything like human cognition, because they can't. They can't. Human cognition is a difference in kind. The way that we use our minds is radically different from the way that other organisms use their brains. And yes, mind is an attribute of brain, but there's something more to it. What is it? What are the three most important words in human knowledge? I told you last week, if you watched the video, the three most important words in human knowledge are, I don't know. Why is human consciousness so different from the mental functioning of other organisms? I don't know, and neither do you, and neither does anyone else. Why is father tongue so radically different from the pattern matching that we see in higher mammals? I don't know, neither do you, neither does anyone else. Why is the human will free from external restraints, from Newtonian physics and biological processes and all of the other idiot arguments that determinists try to make about human behavior? Why is the human will free from all of those deterministic restraints? I don't know. Neither do you. Neither does anyone else. And actually, this is interesting. Kathy Schadl, 5feetoffury.com. I really like this lady. She's a blue-collar intellectual, and I really admire blue-collar intellectuals. I grew up on Mike Royko and then graduated from there to H.L. Mencken, and I read blue-collar intellectuals all my life, and I really admire them. I am one, and I wear this blue collar for that reason. I am one, and I really admire Kathy Schadl, but she had a link today to a video put up by Frank Pastore, who used to be a pro baseball player and is now a blue-collar theologian. The video was an attempt to explain free will, and I half liked it and half hated it, and I hated it from the very beginning. For instance, he made the argument that when you put your hand on the handle of a hot pot and you immediately pull it away, that this is not willed behavior. Of course it is. Look at this. Okay, see this? You can see my hand there. You can hear me playing the guitar badly. I'm moving my hands when I do this. How am I able to do this? I mean, seriously, how can I cause that I can do that? I'm flexing my hand again and again and again. How can I cause that? I don't know. Neither do you, and neither does anyone else know how I can do that voluntarily, willfully. But that is willed behavior. And when I put my hand on a hot burner or something, and then immediately pull it away, when I pull it away, that is willed behavior. That is not unwilled. That is not a reflexive behavior. When the doctor taps your knee with the rubber mallet and your leg goes flying up in the air, that's unwilled. That's involuntary. But pulling your hand off a hot pot, that is not involuntary. That's voluntary behavior. That's chosen. It's quick. It's really fast. Nevertheless, it is willed behavior. Anything that is precise control of your digits, anything that's precise control of any of your muscles, that's willed. It has to be. No other way to do it. So he starts off that, and that really kind of put me off my feet. And I'm watching the rest of it, and he's, you know, making these anti-reductionist arguments, basically anti-materialist, anti-reductionist, and I can go about halfway with all of this, because the reductionist argument about human will is completely ridiculous, and this is why artificial intelligence is such a joke, because it's based on these reductionist premises. And the reality is that whether they're computer scientists or biologists or somewhere in between, neurologists, neurophysicists, whatever, all of the people who are making these, or evolutionary biologists, all of these people who are making these reductionist claims about free will and human beings don't actually know what they're talking about. They're just making claims. And they're, why are they making claims? Because they have to qualify for grant money and tax dollars. That's why. There are hundreds of thousands of academic papers published every year, each one of which is 98% or more bullshit, that real breakthroughs in science are extremely rare, and you can tell when there's a real breakthrough in science because it's denounced for at least the first 20 years. And these papers are completely useless. The work that's been study after study after study, and you see them cited again and again and again, this study, that study, these are all completely useless. These are people who have no idea what they're talking about, who are developing a very abstruse, formal, abstract language for describing their ignorance. But why can I do that? No idea. No idea. I mean, I can do it. I can voluntarily do it as much as I want. How am I able to do it? I have no idea. I don't know. You don't know. No one knows. Why is my will free? I don't know. You don't know. No one knows. But is my will free? Absolutely yes. No possible doubt. And all of the people, including this evolutionary biologist in the New York Times, all the people who want to call free will into doubt, I promise you, every one of them has a luggage tag, has tags on their luggage. And that's all you need to know to understand that those people do not believe the claims that they make at work, that they make these idiotic claims, and they get written up in magazines or in the Sunday New York Times. They get covered by all kinds of web bloggers who are delighted to spit on the human mind. None of those people believe any of the crap that they're writing, and you can tell that that's so because they all have tags on their luggage. They all believe that if they have a tag on their luggage, someone will read that tag and make sure it gets where it's going, and if it gets lost, that they will track them down and find them. So my name, my address, my phone number on every piece of baggage that I own. This is true for me. This is true for you. This is true for everyone. Everyone has luggage tags. And if you believe that human consciousness is fated, as would be described by Newtonian physics, in other words, everything that does happen had to happen, was unavoidable, if you believe that human consciousness is causeless, which is defended in a whole lot of religions and some branches of physics, if you believe that human consciousness is random, which is defended in quantum mechanics, if you believe that human consciousness is determined biologically or neurochemically or financially, economically, which is Marxism. Marxism says all of history is fated. If you believe that human consciousness is anything other than willed, caused by the will of the actor, then why do you have tags on your luggage? Why? What possible purpose could it serve? A dog can't read those tags and know what to do about it. A monkey can't. A paramecium can't. A microorganism infesting the brain of a bee can't, nor can the bee. If the events are unavoidable, or if they're random, or if they're causeless, or if they're fated, it doesn't make any difference. Why would you have a tag on your life? And you voluntarily put it there. Voluntarily. Every concept of consciousness. So we say fact, truth. I speak all the time about the subjunctive and the existential, the imaginary and the real. These are all concepts of consciousness. Reality exists prior to and independent of your consciousness of it. That if the entire human race were wiped out tomorrow, the universe would go on as it has and as it will. The universe would continue to exist, and the existence would be unconditional. That when we use those terms, truth, fact, subjunctive, existential, imaginary, real, there are all kinds of others. When we use those, we are speaking of consciousness, we're speaking of the human mind, and each one of those concepts presupposes a undetermined consciousness, a consciousness that is free to observe the facts of reality, to observe reality and to abstract facts from it, to concoct those facts into statements of truth to distinguish between the subjunctive and the existential, between the imaginary and the real. We are presupposing free will in every statement that we make, including statements like free will is an illusion. This is ridiculous. It's stupid. And no one believes any of this. No one believes it. And the argument that Pastore was making was half appealing because he was defending free will. But how did he defend it? He defended it with religion. He gets to a point where he says that mind is something other than matter. And I don't know if it is or isn't. And nobody else does either. But the fact that you don't know does not imply the existence of a God. This is the inferential fallacy is what I would call it, the attenuated inference, if you want, that you arrive at a place where you no longer understand what's going on, so you invent an explanation. And this is exactly what the academics are doing when they come up with all these idiot determinist arguments. And frankly, I think the reason is exactly the same as the reason that people have invented gods for all of human history in order to dominate people. That God doesn't exist in order to provide a path to salvation. God exists in order to provide a free income for Eric Cartman, the high priest. And every high priest and every academic is in one respect, and every rent-seeking politician and business person, so-called business person, every one of them is in one respect or another Eric Cartman, and they may be better at hiding it. I think Mitt Romney is better at hiding his Cartman-esque character than is Barack Obama, but they're both Eric Cartman. They are both rent-seeking criminals who are looking to subsist at your expense. And I would really love to meet Mitt Romney. I would really love to meet George Bush, and frankly, George Herbert Walker Bush, his father. I'd really love to meet him. And I think these are probably really nice people and people I could really get along with real well. But if I got down to the bone with them, if I really got down to the, to arguing with them about what it is that motivates their behavior, they would either repent or suddenly decide that they hate me. I dare say I wouldn't show up on their website. So, here I am. Free will exists. There is no possible doubt that free will exists. Why does it exist? I don't know. Neither do you, neither does anyone else. And it does not do to invent some magical, mystical miracle that explains it, either by attempting to dismiss it, even though you uphold it in every action that you take. Every action that you take in your life is predicated upon your own belief that your will is free and so is everyone else's. That's what governs your behavior, is your undoubted belief in the existence of free will. But at the same time, the fact that you don't know why your will is free does not give you license to create these imaginary, ridiculous ideas that if I can't understand something, it must be because there's a God. Well, tell me why there's gravity. No one knows. Do you know that, right? I mean, gravity, no possible doubt. I just dropped my guitar pick. It landed right on my computer. Why did that happen? No one knows. No one knows. And I can say, well, because lesser masses are attracted by greater masses. And that is a way of saying, a very fancy way of saying, I don't know, but I have convinced you, or convinced myself that I've convinced you that I do know. And if you talk to physicists, they will tell you it's because of a hypothetical, so far undiscovered particle called a graviton. And what does that mean, hypothetical, so far undiscovered? It's just exactly like God. It means, I don't know, so I invented a word to describe my ignorance. I want to quantify my ignorance at something other than zero, so I'm going to say my ignorance is 0.00000001 graviton. I just made something up. That's all. And a whole lot of what physicists say consists of stuff like this, that I postulated these ideas and built a math around them, and the math works, and therefore the postulations are correct. Well, no, that's not the way science works. You can either demonstrate it or you can't. If you can demonstrate that there's a parasite occupying the bee of brains and causing them to do ridiculous things, okay, show me your work and I will accept it, I'll believe you. If you therefore insist that there must be a parasite who causes poetry, produce your work. And don't just make an idiot claim. And in the same respect, if you say that human mentation is so radically different from everything that can be described at the present time by reduction to science, therefore there must be a God, well, that's just a ridiculous claim. It's a useless claim. And there's nothing wrong with ignorance. If ignorance were fatal, we'd all be dead. Because our ignorance is practically infinite. That what we actually know about anything is next to nothing. And how the reason for that is we haven't been studying very long. We've really only been studying seriously since the time of the Greeks. I mean, you give it an extra 2,500 years from there and call it, you know, round it up to 5,000, 6,000 years that we've actually been studying with any kind of serious rigor. And where have we been studying? In one tiny little blue ball, in one tiny little star system, in one tiny little corner of the Milky Way, far, far away from the center of the galaxy, far, far away from the center of the universe, far, far away from any other star, far away from any other opportunity for us to learn anything at all. We are crouching on our knees at twilight, barely any light left in the sky, and we are peering into a mansion through a keyhole. And we are describing what we see of that mansion, and the descriptions are interesting. They're fascinating. They're wonderful. I don't want to criticize this. I think it's wonderful that we don't know very much, but what we know is amazing, and it's astounding that we've been able to discover anything at all. I walk my dog at night, and I look at the stars, and it's just astounding to me. Just that alone. I mean, I don't necessarily know what I'm seeing, but the mere fact that I'm aware of what it is that I'm seeing, I'm aware of what's going on in the sky, my dog has no awareness of any of that at all. It doesn't mean that his life is pointless or meaningless. It just means that he doesn't have a human level of consciousness. And what we've done so far with our minds is remarkable, is wonderful, and is to be celebrated and to be encouraged in every human mind that we've done so much with a very tiny proportion of human beings being devoted to pushing back the darkness. And just think how much more we'll do when everyone has my attitude toward the mind, when everyone is constantly thinking, constantly working, constantly trying to understand what's going on in the world around them. It'll be that much better. But 5,000, 6,000 years, the universe is, what, 40 billion years old? We don't know very much, and it will be a long time before we do know very much. And it's plausible to me that there will be questions that human beings will never successfully answer. Not because the answer is inherently unknowable, but just because we don't have the means to discover those answers. We certainly don't have the ability to travel, you know, interstellar distances. I mean, we successfully put a... We successfully put a Windows XP machine on Mars. This is great. This is amazing. I'm not, you know, again, I'm not criticizing it, but it's just funny because if you have an iPhone 5, you have more computing power in your pocket than exists on the entire planet of Mars. And this is all good. This is all wonderful. This is all terrific, and it will get better. It will get better and better. The more we apply ourselves, the harder we work. But to insist that we must know everything, that's just hubris. And if it's hubris in a misguided attempt to make claims for science or philosophy that are unwarranted by the evidence, then that's deplorable. It's intellectually wrong, and it is deplorable. But obviously that isn't the reason for it. The reason to make these claims is to enslave people, to enslave you, to enslave your children. That's the reason that people make ridiculous claims that they cannot defend. And that's why you need to learn how to defend your mind, why you need to learn how to think for yourself and not hew to the ridiculous, indefensible claims of so-called experts, whether they're philosophers or scientists or theologians or politicians or journalists. They are all attempting to enslave you. They are all attempting to make you and your children, your wife, everyone you love, their slaves. And this is what I wrote Man Alive to dismantle. I want to take all of this apart. I want this whole priestly idea, because that's where it really comes from, is from the priests. They were the original Eric Cartmans. But whether they're priests or academics or politicians or journalists or other so-called thought leaders, they are all attempting to enslave you so that they can live at your expense. And your only defense against that is to learn how to use your own mind and then tell them to go fuck themselves. You won't, for most of them, you won't even have to tell them twice because they already know they're wrong. So Man Alive is 6 months old today. Happy birthday, Man Alive. In six more months, I would like to be able to say that it has made discernible differences in the way that human life is conducted on Earth. I know that it's made differences in individual human lives, and the more individuals who read the book, the more difference it will make. And the next mind is yours. So go get the book. It's at selfadoration.com. The title of the book is Man Alive, a Survival Manual for the Human Mind. There's a whole lot more at selfadoration.com, including all of these movies, and there are a lot of them by now, where I go through these ideas, and all of this is available to you for free. I entreat you to go get it, to read, learn, mark, inwardly digest, and to share these ideas with the people that you love, the people that you don't want to be enslaved, that you don't want to be milked or sheared or slaughtered by criminals. If you love your life, and if you love the people that you love, you need to go read this book. You need to learn these ideas. I am very grateful to you for giving me your time, for giving me your attention. More grateful than you can ever know. I want you to go out there and have yourself a great week and a great life. Bless you. Thank you so much.